This is RSVB Update, episode 607, recorded Thursday, February 23rd, 2017, the RuneScape Quest Jam. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSVNB Update, the RuneScape podcast that covers most everything RuneScape-related, from your little updates each week, patch notes, tweaks, and fixes, but, of course, first and foremost, probably fun little Jagex puns, which we'll get to later. Sirion and myself are here this week.
Hi.
So, this week was Double XP Weekend. A few stories about that to tell. All around. Game Jam weekend as well. You were doing your own Game Jam. I guess you can maybe talk a bit about that after. Did you manage to get some double XP in?
Yeah, so like I played for like 2 hours on Sunday
evening.
Oh,
that works. That works. I
still got 299s there that I finished off. And now there's the tail off period, which...
Yeah, I already used all mine up, but we'll talk more about what we did in detail later. So this week, as promised, we did get the Skill Cape perk update that brought out perks for the Skill Capes that we just got during Double XP Weekend. A little bit of a reverb there. for those of you guys who listened to past episodes, you know what I was going for. So... Skill Cape perks. We heard a few of these, and, you know, some of them seem to be really good, some of them seem to be kind of neutral, and some of them just seem to be absolutely garbage. So, you know, I think the ones that people are most interested in right now are the Strength perk, Dismember, lasting an additional 2 seconds. Any other ones that really step out, then we'll go into some of the individuals?
I was saved earlier by the Sign of Life perk from the Defense Cape, so that made me a bit happy, I guess.
But that's good.
Otherwise, not particularly, I think.
Yeah. All right. You know, ranged acts as Ava's devices. Prayer imparts the same benefits as lit burners in player-owned houses. I guess you could say that one's really lit. Yeah, we're going for that, eh? That's the kind of lingo we like to employ on this podcast. We're lit, fam. Magic, activate the ability to switch spellbooks at banks. You know, I think this one's pretty good.
Yeah, except for it's like 2 seconds to walk to like the pedestal in the Kadan area in 15 minutes to switch your spellbooks and your failure. But the thing is, though,
if you are just on lodestones, then you have to walk all the way from the Tower of Voices, where if you're just, you know, in the desert and you decide to swap, you just go to the Narda Bank and boom, done. So, I don't know. I can see some use in that. Runecrafting, activate to reveal the required rune for the Rune Goldberg machine. So no more Vizwax FC at level 99 RC. Construction reduces the cost of creating planks. I could see that being useful. Constitution doubles life point regen over time. Agility gives the chance to double tickets from the Brimhaven Agility Arena and stacks with the Karamja Task Set reward. Yeah, that's...
Oh my, I have been waiting for this for years.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And, you know, this is at like, what, a level 40 or level 50 agility piece of content, and they're buffing it at level 99.
You can start playing it at level 1 if you want to. And you unlock like the other obstacles at level 20 and level 40, I think. So
okay, yeah. So close enough. You know, I think this is definitely one that's going to need to be reworked. And on that subject, which we'll, I guess, talk about later once we talk about a rework list, when they do plan on reworking these, they will poll the community, at least that's what they want to do, on whether or not they should be changed. It seems a bit unnecessary to do that for something that, you know, kind of is underpowered right from the get-go. But I guess if Jagex wants to do that, that is just fine. Moving on, Herb Lore, activate to clean all herbs in your inventory for no XP. You know, I should have tested this to see if it works with noted herbs. Probably not, though, right?
I assume it's just normal herbs.
Yeah, okay. Thieving lowers your chance, your stun time when caught from 4.2 to 3 seconds. That's pretty substantial if you're standard thieving. An extra 1.2 seconds, 2 game ticks can make a difference. Crafting thread is no longer needed when crafting. Okay, I think this is another one of those ones that's kind of flying low, because at level 99 crafting, who is crafting things that need a boatload of thread? And that's just one inventory space, and thread is very cheap. So I don't see why this one is here, and I'm hoping that this is one of the ones that will be looked at. What do you think?
I'm just going to leave it with, like, a sigh.
All right, fair enough. Let's see. Construction, I just looked up the number. It's 10% price reduction for that plank reduction cost. So,
does it work with the plank make spell as well?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. But, I mean, it does mention portable sawmills, so that could be a thing.
Mm.
Fletching gives a chance to automatically string a bow when fletching unstrung bows, so I guess kind of like making super powerful potions that automatically go 4 dose with herb lore in some cases. Though, once again, how many people fletch bows for, you know, the sake of fletching bows? I don't think that makes much sense. So I'll leave that one with a sigh as well. Slayer, activate to teleport to any Slayer Master in-game that you could access. Like, is another teleport needed? Because we can get pretty much anywhere within 30 seconds in the game now if you have all the teleports. So, and if you're higher up at the Slayer level, you're probably going to be using Morvryn in Prifdinas or Curadel in the dungeon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see about that one. Hunter, activate to give your herb lore habitat vine plant the effects of its hunter potion.
That sounds oddly specific.
It really is specific for herb lore habitat. And, you know, hunter potions are not that hard to get. So, you know, this one I can see being neat and very specific to the skill. But once again, it's neither here nor there. All right, are you ready for 2 facepalm ones right now?
Mm-hmm.
Mining gives an invisible +2 skill bonus.
So inspired.
Absolutely.
Oh my, that was...
Smithing gives the same effects as goldsmithing gauntlets.
Beautiful.
Who at level 99 is smelting gold? I mean, come on. Like, I mean, I can see putting these in the game as they are right now, but, and then fixing them when the mining and smithing rework comes out. But, I mean, wow. All right, on to a better one. Fishing gives a chance to get a double catch. That's good. Imagine catching rocktail and whatnot. You get 2 instead of 1. Cooking prevents all food from being burnt. I like this one. What do you think of this one?
This seems one of the more powerful ones.
Yeah, most definitely.
It's not very convenient to get your cooking gauntlets out of your bank, but this might be nice for if you like do some quick food.
Yeah,
and I mean, because I often cook my own like rocktail.
Right, because it's more efficient that way.
Yeah.
So, and you get some XP along the way. Fire making, activate to light a fire on the spot you're standing on.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in a pinch and you need to cook some shrimp or maybe the shark that you caught out in the Elven lands, sure, I can see that, but most often you're going to want to try and find a range. Or you could just use the cooking cape and chop a tree and use that to start cooking something. So...
Yeah.
All right. Now, here's a potentially really powerful one. Invention slows the drain of invention charge. Reducing, of course, the amount of divine energy that we need when using augmented items. I can see this being useful. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder with these perks, because it doesn't seem as though they were consistently designed, right?
No. So what this update looks like is somebody came up with this idea of skill cape perks, gave a few good examples, like pitched this to the content team, like, I want to do this, and look, here's five really good perks as an example, and we can probably come up with something for the other skills. And then they ran out of ideas.
Yeah.
And that's why we ended up with some pretty good ones.
And some facepalm-worthy ones.
Yeah. I'll let you finish the list, but...
Yeah. Summoning gives a chance to save charms when infusing pouches.
That's basically the same as spirit.
Yeah.
Gems, right?
And, I mean, its summoning is known as the Great Pouch-Making Skill. I don't know anyone past level 99 summoning who is going for anything outside of 120 or 200 mil that makes summoning pouches in bulk because, you know, you can just make a handful of them at a time and you're good to go for the next month or so. So I'm not sure about this one except for people training to 120 or 200 mil. But we'll leave it
as it is. Also not, like, these days, it's also not like people are really running out of charms.
Right.
Especially with spirit gems.
Yeah, most definitely. Dungeoneering, teleport to any available resource dungeon.
Yeah, so
that's good.
That's why we have Hordestalker's Ring. Hordestalker's Ring.
Oh, okay. See, I'm a Dungeoneering noob, so I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
It does the same thing?
I assume so.
And what level can you get that ring?
You get it from sinkholes.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I think you can even buy it as well from the Dungeoneering Reward Shop for, like, points.
Yeah, I've seen it in there. Farming, give a chance of instantly harvesting a patch. This is similar to the patch bomb that you could get from, I believe it was the Cabbage Face Punch minigame that would automatically harvest all your patches. And, you know, being the farming person and seeing that this was something already in the game for farming, my initial idea for the 99 farming perk was to, you know, either reduce disease chance or remove disease entirely. I think that would have been a much better thing to give for farming because, come on, you're a master farmer. Your stuff is clearly not going to get diseased as much as it would prior to having 99, right?
That is true, but on the other hand, like, disease is a big, big mechanic in farming. It's important.
It's actually a balancing mechanic. Well, I mean, it's like they could just reduce it a bit, right? Like 20%, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, that would be fair. Moving on to divination, gives a chance of saving divination materials when weaving divine items. All right. That could be good. It's not something to write home about, but it's there. Woodcutting provides an increased chance at finding bird's nest and crystal geodes. You know, I think if this stacks with the rabbit foot and the other thing that allows you to do this, this could actually be not too bad if you're going for 120 or 200 mil woodcutting.
Mm.
No?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, woodcutting is also one of these things that they add all this AFK training methods for, and then they add things like this that makes you pay attention again.
Right. And, you know, in some ways, that's the pendulum swinging back and forth, and it makes it so that things aren't fully AFK, and you have to pay attention, which is good because
that is true.
Like, if you think about what they first said, I'll continue.
How does this actually help you? Like, how does this actually amend your woodcutting experience?
That's a good point. Very good point.
Like, all these, like, the news post says, like, I will quote because, like, to make sure you believe me, let me see. That's why we have added a perk to each skill cape, each one a useful effect fitting in smoothly with its skills playstyle.
Right.
Right? That was the goal of this thing. Now, I've looked through this, and there's quite a few where I think, like, I do not see myself benefiting from this.
Like the +2 invisible mining boost.
I mean, sure, you'll benefit from that if you do mining, but it doesn't really amend my game experience. It, like, what does it add for me? Like, I get more ore. Well, great, but it's so uninspired.
Okay. Before we go through the other mechanics, I'll just say that the quest point cape also has a perk, and that adds 30 seconds onto your Tears of Guthix's time.
So, I am sort of sad that that is the best thing they could come up with for a quest points cape.
Yeah, well, you know, we're questing connoisseurs, so we master that skill in RuneScape, so we, of course, do expect better for that. So looking at this list, you feel it's okay. Some of them are okay. Some of them are, oh, that's good and useful. Now, and you said that it's supposed to amend our skilling experience to have a meaningful add-on to those skills. So with that being said to you, which of them stick out like sore thumbs of examples that don't do that and drastically need to be reworked?
Well, the agility one, for sure. I mean, that how does adding a bonus, like how does giving a chance on double tickets in one place where you can train agility, where nobody trains agility, how does that amend your skilling experience?
And how did Jagex not ask this question when they were designing this?
Exactly. Like, I looked at this, was like, that's bad. Let me try a better alternative. Fought for 5 seconds and came up with something better, which I think is, for example, making it a better version of the spotted cape, like make it weight reducing or give yourself more run power.
Right. And I mean, sure, you know, that's a great idea, but that leads us to another problem that Jagex wanted to rework with EOC and subsequently RS3 that never got reworked is what to do with run energy and weight. They wanted to do that, but they never got around to it. Because you remember when RS3 came out, there was no indicator of how much run energy you had. They wanted to remove that stat and the weight. They left the run energy, but they removed the weight because they wanted to rework that mechanic, and players wanted it back. And RS3 came out in 2013, and here we are moving into 2017, and still the weight mechanic is here. So if you went with the spottier cape mechanic, you would once again have a useless weight mechanic, but like you say, it would actually provide a benefit. So
no, I mean, I don't know. Make, like, agility is one of these skills that is not really a thing that you really do as part of your experience, except for using the shortcuts and running. Like, if we consider running part of the agility, like, skilling experience, then maybe, yeah, they should.
I got news for you.
Oh,
I'm gonna read you a description here. I don't know what you're gonna think about this, but tell me what you think. So, the agility cape should act as a graceful cape, including weight reduction and set bonus.
Yeah.
You know where that's from?
No.
Old school of RuneScape.
Oh.
So they got that as their agility skill cape bonus. And graceful cape is part of the graceful clothing set. It is needed for a set effect, which increases run energy restore rate by 30%.
Beautiful.
So that is what the old school RuneScape agility cape does.
Okay, so we don't have the graceful thing, but we don't have anything that increases the run restore rate in game, I think.
Right.
Give it to the agility cape. Done. I mean, it's simple as that. How long did this take us? Like 5 to 10 minutes. Do this for every cape and you have something fun. But some of these things are just like, how, like, can we find another item of that skill, take its effect and put it on the cape?
That's, right.
That's lazy. This is lazy design. And you have, I feel bad for saying this because I know people spend time in implementing this. I know people are passionate about
most
the
definitely.
Game, but this is lazy design.
The old school RuneScape smithing cape acts as goldsmithing gauntlets, just as we have here. But the old school RS mining cape 5% chance of receiving an extra orb while mining, up to adamantite, mind you, and it stacks with the Varrock armor.
Hmm.
So,
I mean, if you look at all these items, almost all of them either have an effect that is just a stat change,
yeah,
or it takes an effect from an already existing item.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones that are unique are, I guess, the quest points cape.
Divination one? Do we have any?
Well, yeah, okay, that's like, it's a stat thing, but sure, the divination one. Invention, I mean, that's just a stat change. Fire making, okay, there you go. Hunter is very, very specific. Slayer, I guess.
Yeah, even though we have maybe, teleports coming maybe out the
fletching,
ears. Fletching.
Thieving.
Thieving. Mm-hmm.
Herb lore, I guess. Agility. And that's about it.
Right.
So, like... And runecrafting. Runecrafting might be one of the more inspired ones. But then... And that's... That runecrafting, I think, is a pretty good example. Because... The Rune Goldberg machine is one of the... few things that people actually use as part of the runecrafting skills, I think. Yeah. Like, the only two choices they had here was making runes or using the Rune Goldberg machine, and I think the latter is actually probably used more.
So, I most definitely agree with that.
And this is something new. It amends that experience, it makes it better, and actually gives a good reason to go for 99 runecrafting.
What about lowering by two levels the level required to reach your next multiplier? So rather than at level 91 RC getting double natures, you get it at level 89 if you were wearing... Or no, never mind. That's useless if you have 99. Forget that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, there you go. Like some of these, you can... It's fairly easy to come up with better alternatives to these. I had a few written down. I don't have it in front of me, but like... What, for example, summoning could just reduce the summoning... just reduce the rate at which you lose summoning points when you have something summoned, for example. That's more useful than this because we already have something that does this. So for each of the skills, Jerex has had a chance to fill in like a gap in that skill to add something new. And in almost all the cases, they went for something that's already there. And while it's the safe option in terms of balancing, it is also the lazy option and makes this update feel a bit bland.
Yeah. At least we didn't get the OSRS crafting one, unlimited teleports to the crafting guild. Just saying.
Well.
But, you know, I would love to see your list that you put together of potential alternatives, and we'll include that in the show notes once you can fish that out of your computer. So that would be good to see, and I'll put that in the show notes if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I mean, I only had a few, but that was just looking at it for a minute or two.
Okay. And
I think if I'm pretty sure that everybody looking at this list can come up with a few alternatives if they just look at it for a few minutes.
You have Dismember lasting an additional 2 seconds, being paired with the Defense Cape and the Invention Cape, and you have some really powerful combinations. If you have a max cape there for end game combat. So I think those are three things that could be paired together nicely. You know, Dismember lasts 6 seconds, take it up to 8. It's got a 15 second cooldown, so it's got a 50, just north of 50% uptime on that. So. But
what I was hoping for with this update was looking at this list and being like, oh, that's clever, or hey, that's cool, and none of them did that.
Okay.
I think.
But the good thing is that Jagex is listening on this, and they're willing to pull them and change them if they need to, if the community desires so. Inspiring and unique on here, you know, nothing really jumped out at me. And I was expecting to see more that were perhaps a little bit overpowered. And when Jagex was talking about the design of this, they said that, you know, they could have went that way, but they didn't want to make something that was overpowered and would need to be nerfed, which I think is a good move. But, you know, that ended up with so many of these looking underpowered to begin with and not as inspiring, which in itself isn't good either. But, you know, if I had to pick the two that most jump out at me at providing the most benefit, you know, I got to say the quest point cape, that extra 30 seconds in Tears of Gothics to you know, get those tiers to increase the amount of XP that you get. That's good. Granted, they could have come up with something better for that, but that is definitely useful. The Hunter one, maybe, but I don't know how I feel about Herblore Habitat and the fact that Juju Hunter potions are so easy to get. You know, beyond that...
Which three of them would you put on your max cape if you had one?
If I had a max cape, I would put the farming one on my max cape. Just because, you know, there are times when I get distracted during a herb farming run and I end up with, you know, 10 seconds left on the Juju farming potion and I don't get to all the patches. So if I could trigger that, that would help speed up. Though with that being said, it's looking like it's a very small percentage chance to trigger on that, so it might not be worth sacrificing the spot for that one. Okay, but if I had my absolute thing and I was going to pick what I was doing, and let's just say I was, you know, training mining, I would go for invention to save the divine charges. I would also go for the mining invisible plus two skill bonus, providing ores were great again. And what would be the third one? I don't know what the third one would have to be. Because I'm thinking in a case where I would be training mining, not at the Saren Stones, and I was looking for ore. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to find a use for the magic swap spellbook one, but... Oh, I know what the use for the magic swap spellbook one is. When you're Grack Nature Runecrafting and you want to use standard teleports rather than lunar teleports, you use this cape, and then when you get to the bank, you can swap to lunar to repair your pouches.
Oh, there you go.
So there's that. That's a case where you aren't going to go all the way to the Qadarn altar to change. That's the use case for magic right there.
Fair.
So... And I mean, once again, I'm sure we'll see some changes to this, specifically the agility one, probably the mining one, hopefully, based on what players say. But it's a good first attempt, and I think the fact that Jagex is wanting to listen on this is a good thing, though I don't know if they should be polling if these things need to be changed at the end of the day. What do you think about that?
I think Jagex just... Listening to player feedback is good, but also these are game design choices they should take in the end. So
yes, absolutely.
If you can't get the sentiment of the players out of player feedback, then you're doing something wrong. Like, there's no need to also additionally pull on that. Like, just listen to what players have to say and base your decision on that. It feels a bit like
oh, we don't want to incite any riots or anything like that.
Yeah, they sort of want to cover that.
Give us our opinion on what the game update should be. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then I think we can move on to the patch notes for this week, unless there's any skill cape perks things that you want to continue on about.
No, let's not do that.
Yeah, we wasted a lot of people's time, and hopefully you guys enjoyed that, because that was kind of in depth and poking at these things and hoping that they turn out to be just fine. So. Here we go. The Trophy Taker perk no longer works with only one kill remaining on a Slayer task to prevent awarding the skipping of Slayer points. The Trophy Taker perk, for those of you guys who aren't aware, is the invention perk for weapons that basically says, hey, I'm on a Slayer task, either reduce my kill count by two or don't reduce it at all. So if you had one remaining and you reduced it by two, oops, you would end up with no Slayer points.
That feels like a bug they should just have fixed. But okay.
Yeah. Two new boss pets have been added to the game. Yakuminu and Diddyzag. Of course, for Yakumaru and Beastmaster Dirzag. They're a requirement for the golden final boss title and have a 1 out of 300 drop rate with a threshold of 60 kills. They can be won in an off-loot kill and will be awarded if the player is disconnected or leaves a group after winning the pet before managing to claim it. So a bit of work there to ensure that if you disconnect or you accidentally leave the group, you'll still get your pet, which is good. The Wilderness Worms drop table has been reworked. I guess they kind of needed to do this because if you're thinking about it, who really goes out on trips to fight the Wilderness Worm, right?
Nobody.
Exactly. It's a very interesting concept there, but once again, there's little to no reason for people to go hunt this down in the wilderness and find it. So,
mm-hmm.
Also, the chance for the wilderness worm to spawn has been lowered. Apparently, it was appearing too much.
I had a chuckle over this because just, I don't know when it was, like last week, the week before, and look, very recently, they actually increased the chance and like they must have sort of reverted that. Or it was increased too much. I was just having a bit of a chuckle over the back and forth on this.
Yeah. All right. A check has been added to recalculate quest points after the Shield of Arab single-player login check to ensure players don't appear to have lost one quest point until next login. You know, I had an issue with this last week when it appeared in-game, and I was wondering, oh, where'd my quest points go? But there we go.
Were you still able to wear your quest point cape then?
No, that disappeared, and as did my ultimate quester title.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it you know, totally removed the quest point from my character. So that was fixed within the next day. So patch notes were kind of sparse this week. Anything else here that jumped out at you?
Not really. I mean, the team was probably busy on the game jam stuff. So
yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Alrighty. Well, speaking of Game Jam, we do have some Game Jam updates that were worked on this weekend. Basically, what this was a double XP weekend for us, but at the same time, the J-Mods went into work on the weekend and worked tirelessly on Saturday and Sunday on a lot of these things that started out as passion projects and were suggested by the players on the forums. So we got some interesting updates for this. First up is a buff bar split that basically splits the positive and negative buff bars and allows you to have up to 30 buffs displayed at one time. So what do you think of this?
The buff bar has always annoyed me a lot, like in terms of like positioning and
right.
how it wraps around. And I mean, they're not fixing everything about it, but it's really annoying. And I hope I can make it a bit better, like in terms of my like inventory layout, because right. I'm not really happy about where it is right now.
Yeah, and I mean, but it doesn't make sense sometimes the way things stack up on there. So it's good that you're going to be able to split it.
Yeah.
And I think it was 18 positive and 12 negative buffs. So that's going to be a lot that you're going to be able to show. Mm-hmm. Mod Timbo has also got permission to take his passion project, the Luck Rework, out to become an actual game update. So the Luck Rework is going to basically rework the Ring of Wealth to include 4 tiers of luck, low, medium, high, and elite, and they'll be based basically on different boss types. So, for example, Telos and Araxor will be elite, God Wars Dungeon 2 will be high, God Wars Dungeon 1 is medium, and things like the KBD and Giant Mole will be low tier. So that's the way this is going to split out, and you'll need different rings to access each of these tiers, and they'll be made at different crafting levels along the way too. So I think this is an interesting way of going about this. What do you think?
I'm actually quite excited about this. Like, the Ring of Wealth was always this item that just sat there. And
for the longest time, they didn't know how it worked.
Yeah, and then at some point you get it and you use it, and then you sort of stop using it because it it loses its value over like high level combat ranks or something.
Right.
And it was never really part of it. And I'm really excited actually about seeing this whole thing around it and seeing this new tiers of rings, and also this announcement actually of adding a whole new crafting tier.
That's pretty good.
That actually, I think it has to do with invention. Like you take, is it an onyx? And then you add some stuff on top of that?
Some modified onyx, alchemical onyx, they're calling it, gold bar, earth runes, fire runes, cosmic rune. And you get a level 60 ring, providing you have 107 invention and 97 crafting.
Yeah, I mean, this adds stuff to high-end invention. I think invention is, like, the invention requirements might be very, very high, especially compared to, like, 60 crafting. Who has 60 crafting and 107 invention?
It's 97 crafting.
97? Ah, okay, I thought 60.
Yeah.
You said.
And
oh, it's a level 60 ring. Okay, in that case, it makes sense. All right.
A level 60 stat ring. And, you know, the very good thing about this update is that it moves the Ring of Wealth from replacing your drop to adding on to it. Because every item on your list is going to be part of the drop table now. It's going to have a luck percentage, and that luck percentage will be increased with these rings. So as a result, you know, if you're increasing your luck percentage with a tier 4 luck ring, you'll have a higher chance of getting the things that require more luck.
Yeah, and from what I understood from the stream, they also, like, if you wear, like, the Ring of Wealth, some of the less, like some of the worst items from the rare drop table are actually removed
from
the drop table.
They're going to be removing those. And they're going to be making, if you're wearing the standard Ring of Wealth, it's going to become a bonus and not a replacement.
So, like, all these things are going to make it a lot more powerful. Like, you're going to have to start thinking about using it if you want to make money. And I think it's really cool that also that Ring of Wealth is not just a thing that works everywhere. Like, if you want to get the better drops at Amex or like, high-level bosses, which have way better rewards or higher potential for that ring, then you have to invest more. And all that, it's adding a whole new mechanic to the game, like, or it was already there, but it's going to make it a lot more present. It is also opening up interesting synergies between invention and crafting, like a whole new tier based on that synergy. I mean, that's what we want from invention.
Yeah, most definitely.
And that's what we want from elite skills.
So,
like, this whole project feels like it has been put together really, really well.
And, yeah, well, that's mod Timber, I mean, for you.
That's what Montemo does, yeah. Like leave it to him to do balancing. And like, as part of this, I think we're going to see a lot of improvements to the drop tables. I think Montemo even said that he's working on some drop table reworks in general as well. So definitely keep your eyes out of there. I'm going to keep an eye on this because I'm really excited to see these things, even though I'm not really a combat person.
Well, it's not just combat. It's also going to work on the crystal chests and clue scrolls and skilling.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that, like, with this luck becoming such an important thing, that we're going to see more integration with skills, like maybe some sort of bonuses on, like, artisan skills where you get, like, a better version.
And that would be perfect to bring in with the mining and smithing rework.
So, like, definitely so much potential and really well thought out and executed. And kudos to Montembo for just making the design doc, making it publicly available, and being so passionate about discussing it with the community. It looks like something really nice.
And you know, this was a passion project of his before Game Jam, so there's a good chance that some of the work that he's done on this had been already out there and laid out. So, very good. I think this one's definitely going to shine when it arrives. We also got pet interface add-ons for things like the Kresbot, Jazz, Phoenix Babies, Aquanite, and Ganopets. Basically, object pets that you really can't have in the pet interface right now, and that'll be coming soon. NXT updates the option to remove ground decoration. And the Java client deprecation soon, so trying to remove all options or move all options.
Yeah, so they're trying to move people to NXT. They really want to get rid of Java because, like, it's holding them back on things. And there's still people that haven't switched. And like part of it is some of the functionality that, as you like, compatibility mode, it's not NXT yet. So they're sort of having to take a step down on NXT to get all the functionality that's in Java. But yeah, they're sort of working on that. And as soon as all those features are in, then they can like actually get it out of Java. But they want to move more people to NXT before they do that.
Yeah, so if you haven't tried NXT, give it a try. You might be pleasantly surprised what it can do on your computer. Okay, ready for this one? Penguins in Space, the musical Raids with Beatsmaster Kurzag.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's...
You know, this is just one of those little updates that Jagex puts out that, you know, is very classic RuneScape in terms of what it offers. And, you know, we have really haven't seen things like this in a long time. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this turns out. And, you know, Mod Osborne had a great quote on this, you know. He said, "This is just fun to play, and it's nice to return to that kind of update. If it gets a smaller audience, then that's fine." And the reason he says that is because, you know, it won't give huge rewards. It won't give grand amounts of XP or anything like that. It might give a little bit, but it's not going to be something that's going to reward you greatly.
I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, they showed some like prototype gameplay during the Game Jam stream, and it just looks silly. Like, do you know this game? Like, I can't remember the name, where you hold a thing and it keeps telling you to like do something, like spin something, hit something, squeeze something. Yes, that exactly. Like, it feels a bit like that because it keeps telling you what to do. You have to do the right thing, and everybody gets different instructions, and it's just one big chaos. And then after that, there's this boss fight with Beatsmaster Kurzag with an amazing soundtrack. Like, they made a song for it during the Game Jam. It's a passion project in its own way, and it was such a joy to just look at it happen. And I mean, leave it to Mott Raven to do silly stuff like this,
but
this is why we love RuneScape.
And this is what they need to get back to. And, you know, if we can do this and, you know, introduce, I guess, what would be the current generation of RS players to this kind of content, we might have a new kind of drive for, you know, not necessarily non-serious content, but content that is going to be, in effect, classic RuneScape and can be done quickly, like Bottle Quest, which we need to see more of. Speaking of quests, one small favor too. You know, people either love this quest or hate it. You know, I think I'm somewhere in the middle, and you know, I think perhaps time has influenced that.
It's funny because like very recently I was interviewed for the Clan Quest magazine, and one of the questions was, "What's your favorite quest?" And I decided to go with something that is not very traditional, and I think One Small Favor was mentioned, and like it's in a way a terrible quest. It needs a lot of items, and we're gonna go back to this like at the next point, actually. But it's just the dialogue of that quest is absolutely classic. It's so well executed, and the whole concept of the quest is very well done. So like, I am happy that I chose to pick up this particular quest to do this. And I'm going to play it and I'm going to enjoy it.
Of course we're going to play it. It's a quest.
I know I will enjoy it. I mean, we have come a very, very far since the original One Small Favor. It's definitely going to have some quality of life improvements, but sure, you'll be running back and forth to the bank to grab the next item you need. Sure, you'll like go all across the world to do small favors, but that's the whole point, and there's going to be lots of fun dialogue, and yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Thank you, Jagex.
Yeah, and you know, but once again, classic Jagex, and I think that's something the player wants them to get back to. There's also the quality of life improvements to certain quests, including Imp Catcher, in addition to last week's Hero and Shield of Arav. But Imp Catcher is going to be more focused on this kind of quality of life thing with items and whatnot, I think. That's the general gist I got from it.
Yeah. So I think Mutz 2 is working on these things. So he sort of picks up one quest at a time. So Shield of Arav and Hero's Quest, like, what's the last one? And Imp Catcher is going to be the next. And it's basically going to be a redo in terms of Imp Catcher. But right now you have to, like, kill imps and hope for the right drops, because you have to gather the 4 beads and bring them back. That's the entire quest.
Yep.
It's not that much fun. And basically they're going to do the same thing as they did with Cook's Assistant, where there's going to be specific quest items you have to get. So you have to, like, visit 4 imps or something and do some small task for them to get
small favor.
Like, give one of them, like, soup because they feel bad, and then, like, give them soup and they give you the thing, like small stuff like that. But it means you don't have to really get your own items or kill a lot of stuff and do things based on chance.
And see, that's one of the things I remember from Imp Catchers. You had to go to an area, first of all, where you were going to find a huge amount of imps. And then once you got there, there was no guarantee that they would be in the area. And then once you started finding them, you just had to keep killing them.
Yeah, so they're going to, like, change that. And they're going to do that with more quests. Like, some quests are just not great. And by doing, like, people don't want to have to go to the bank or the GE all the time to get their items for the quest. They just want to enjoy the experience of going.
Right, it needs to be immersive.
And that's why they're working on these, like, improvements. That's why these days you get this quest start screen where you can just click on a thing and see all the items you need if you just want to enjoy the experience. And that's the thing they want to slowly roll out to all the quests. And especially these low-level quests, they're played by Iron Man a lot. Like, making these changes to these quests, sort of, it used to be something they didn't do because they thought they weren't playing a lot, but actually, these low-level quests are played quite a lot, so making improvements to that is going to impact a lot of new players and hopefully hook them quicker or something.
Yeah, and that's good. They're also working on a murder mystery quest with a well-known character. We're not told who the character will be, and you have to explore the story by typing key phrases. And the example they gave was their prototype was working with fruit. So you would say, type various fruit names, and then you would get another thing, another clue, and you would just keep typing until you found the answer. And you would work backwards to that, effectively figuring out what happened to this person. Who do you think it's going to be?
That's a tough one. It's apparently a well-loved character.
So Meg? You know, I'm just looking for ways to have Meg die. You know that, right?
Yes. I don't know who it is. It's probably going to be someone in, like, a free-to-play world. Like, probably someone in the beginner's area. Somebody everybody knows.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, like, like, just looking at Mordospun talk about this, he was so passionate about it.
And that's what they want to get back to. They want to get back to these kinds of quests, I think.
They had, like, he had this whole vision of, like, a non-linear quest where everything you have to figure out, not by just clicking the right things, but by, like, actually thinking and making this whole immersive experience where you can go back later, add more terms, and I mean, it's going to be hard. If you look at, like, you have to type in the right words, this is going to be maybe a problem with people who English is not the first language. So there's definitely a lot of gameplay obstacles they would have to get across. But if they can pull this off, it's going to be something unique of the level of, what was the quest, the first voice actor quest again?
One Piercing Note.
One Piercing Note. That was unique, and in RuneScape, this is going to be the same thing. This is going to be absolutely unique. If they can pull this off, it's going to be huge. And
right.
It's so great to see them talking about this with so much passion. You can see it means a lot to them, and that is going to show in their work.
that we get from this after it comes out is that if these two quests are successful in that they're not necessarily related to whatever the story of the day is, you're going to end up with the ability to do these kind of quests going forward. And that is a lot what original RuneScape was about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. And also one other thing with updates that are going to be reworked, they want to do a games room update. So you'll be able to play various games room games wherever you might be, skilling, bank standing, and then, you know, get some game points from them, because as it is right now, the games room is, you know, absolutely useless.
I think it's an interesting take. I mean, that's why you want to offer these. Like, people don't want to go and play these games,
right?
But if you add them on top of existing experiences, that might work.
Yep. Lumbridge Crater graphical rework intended to become new meeting spots is basically a reclamation. You know, people wanted to make it a lake. That was one of the ideas last year that was voted. Never got done. Obviously, we're seeing that done here. And I think that makes sense because, you know, four years after, it's time.
Apparently, this was the most voted on player.
After the bank update. Rework. Yep.
And I have looked, like someone picked it up, they made it, and it looks absolutely beautiful. It, since we got NXT, like, all these graphical updates have been amazing, and it looks of the quality that you can now expect. Like, it looks very similar to Cafferby.
Right, because basically and what, like, we saw was everything there, except for some lighting reworks and stuff like that.
Mm.
So it was pretty close to being ready.
And they also told us that, like, slowly what they want to do. So there's this whole new ground texture thing that came with the Cafferby rework. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I remember there's some.
And they moved. And they also applied that to Tavoli and Burford, that yep. area. And they want to sort of roll it out across the world, but they don't want to do it all in one go. So part of it is going to be done around Lumbridge with this update as well. And, like, you can just see the area, like, coming to life. And
right.
We're going to talk about more graphical.
If anyone is wanting to see this in the Game Jam Q&A that was on Twitch and will be on YouTube by the time this is out, just head to around the 42-minute mark, and you can see what this is going to look like.
It's really cool, and they're gonna add, like, tiny little stuff to it. I think they sort of intend it to be also a place where people can sort of skill.
Right, because they did mention portables.
So portables, it might be a good location for that. They're gonna make the benches that are there, they're gonna make the player able to sit on them. So that's gonna be a first.
Sittable benches, first time since construction.
Yes. So that's gonna be really cool if they implement that. That's gonna be the ninja team that does that. They had some ideas for maybe making the trees, like, sort of special. So it's gonna be a low level accessible area, but it's gonna be a point that people go back to. And I mean, I think it's really cool. And
I think anywhere that just gets us out of Brif, if we're bank standing out of the GE, any kind of community area like that is a good thing.
And I mean, I think it's also really cool to see the world sort of evolve. Like, we remember the days before the Battle of Lumbridge.
Yeah, we I still wish the farming tree was behind the Lumbridge Castle.
We remember the actual Battle of Lumbridge because it took forever. And then we remember the period after that where, like, the beach and, like, all these event spaces.
Winter happened. Event.
The winter event.
They should have done that again this year, the winter event there.
So, like, all these things happened there, and now it's sort of reclaimed again, and the whole area is going to be whole again. And I think it's just well done.
I agree. We also are going to be having skilling outfits, the non-elite versions, coming into games. So I believe that's the cooking outfit, the divination outfit, the prayer outfit, and one other that I'm currently forgetting the name of. But those are going to be coming soon, and you're going to be able to get them through various activities in-game. And these are the ones that, when combined together, give you a 6% boost to that skills experience gained.
Yeah, these are the outfits you can get from Treasure Hunter, but
yeah,
you're
going
to be able to obtain.
Right. And I mean, I think these ones you can definitely put into game where you can just buy them with some kind of currency or do something because, I mean, they're not overpowered like the Treasure Hunter ones. So.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Virago Quest, giving the boss more backstory, not necessarily combat heavy, going to involve invention, divination, anima, and practically everything that we've been working on since 2013. So that should be interesting. Any thoughts on this one?
It was really funny because they were talking about Virago when the boss came into the game, and it was like the only backstory it had was like I Rock, like literally,
yep.
and they gave Virago a bit more backstory during the Tusker World event, but I mean it is like an intriguing character, don't you think?
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, especially with the anima link and the fact how it was turning out to be Virago versus Tuska when the Tuska event was happening. Virago dealt the killing blow on that, so definitely very important. You know, there's some anticipation that maybe Virago could be involved in Sliske's endgame. So, you know, it's good to kind of flesh the lore out on these things, and I think it can be done in a way that's quick and not too all-consuming.
Yeah, I mean, why add new things when there's so many things you can still explore in the game that are already there? And I think Virago is one of these things that are really well done. And what make me really happy is that, well, because it's a high-level boss, that doesn't mean there needs to be high-level combat in this
quest.
Exactly,
like, and it's an introduction to Virago, maybe.
And they actually said they don't want to make this a high-end quest. They want this to make this accessible, and this might be a way that people like find out about Virago existing, like if you look at the normal player trajectory throughout the game. And that made me really happy because I feel lately we get a lot of like quests that sort of have this ever more difficult boss fights just to keep these PVM people happy. Like maybe
right.
That's not fair, maybe that's not what they're doing, but that's definitely how it feels. And then they get this chance of making a really hard boss fight in a quest, and they say, no, sure, why would we do that, and why don't we just focus on the story? And I think that made me really happy.
Yeah,
so
and you know that's what questing is about
still,
in RS.
There's still that.
And whenever I tried other MMOs and did one of their quests and, you know, paled in comparison compared towards the RuneScape lore and story. So that's definitely what Jagex needs to focus on here, and I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some ARC improvements, ARC quality of life fixes, requirements overview, contract improvements, and more resource bars. Okay. I don't want to talk about the ARC anymore than we already have.
Okay.
I think we beat that topic to death, you and I. So,
yeah.
The aura bag at some point in the future. No more aura objects. They will probably only exist in an aura bag, but they want to get the design out on this and consult with the players about how this will be. They don't know, you know, whether it'll be you just click the aura slot and you're able to access all your auras, or if it'll be a physical bag or something to the effect of that. But
I think this is really good. I mean,
yeah.
When auras first came out, there were only a few of them, but now like I think there's solid two lights in
right.
my bank, or
yeah,
at least one,
and they do take up that bank space. So.
And it's always really annoying to find exactly the one you want because the icons are not always
they're not descriptive.
Not some of them are, but some of them are not. Just mainly because the resolution is so low that they don't have a lot of room to play with. So yeah, I definitely think that there could be some improvements there. I also wouldn't mind if they just started coloring them differently. Like they're all like goldish on the outside. Why not just use different color for different types? But I mean, this is definitely an improvement, and I hope that this will actually be implemented relatively soon.
Yep. Probably a couple months out. And with that being said, we do have some dates for some of these updates. So here we go. March 6th, that's 2 weeks from now. The simplest ones will be in game. The Lumbridge Crater, the model pet interface, so the Kresbot and whatnot, and the basic skilling outfits. Those will all be coming March 6th. ARC quality of life fixes, second half of March. quests and musical raids encounters need to be developed further with no date. The calendar, which is something they talked about, an in-game calendar for upcoming events, and the Karumja rework and the Aura Pack need to be discussed further and designed. So,
but you see the Karumja rework images. They looked really cool as well.
Yeah, I did. That's also in the Twitch stream. You know, perhaps it's just the way the lighting was here, but I don't know. I think it's got to come down to lighting, because you know, aside from it, it looks okay. I would have just looking at it again, it is the lighting, but and you know, it's not going to be a full rework like Catherby was. They're just going to reuse some existing assets, and you know, they're going to have to adjust buildings and ships and whatnot, but
I mean, in general, I'm just a fan of every graphical rework. I'm really excited to see where, like, everything is going, so...
Yeah, and they need to do that for NXT. All right. And I believe that's all we got from Game Jam, unless there's anything else I missed or anything you want to mention.
I was just surprised how much represented quests were and how little represented PVM was.
Right, and see, that's the thing. You know, this is the chance to work on those updates that don't necessarily get the light shone on them all the time. And what have we been asking for a long time? Bottle quests, simple quests, the return of RuneScape, classic questing, focusing on little story and stuff, and that's what we got with these quests here. So I think that's what you got to take out of Game Jam. So
apparently the Jagex mods feel the exact same thing about the game, and maybe this will be a clear signal for the content, like the team that decides on the content.
And maybe, you know, really, that was really apparent to me with what Mod Osborne said, the passion coming from him, designing something that is, quote, just fun to play, and being able to return to that kind of update. And he doesn't care if it gets a smaller following because it's not as epic. And
I mean,
that's what they want to do.
They can be a bit freer now because they don't really have a big shareholder behind this. Like, this is passion projects. There's no commitments. They can just do whatever they want. But in the end, they also need to make their money because the shareholders want their money. So it's a lot harder getting all this fun stuff in when it actually comes down to committing resources to these updates. So
you think that's what it is that the higher ups want more epic updates, whereas the, you know, the actual content designers want to get back to the whole RuneScape idea?
I think there is, like, there's a healthy tension between those two. And I mean, I'm just hoping that some of these come out, the player's response will be positive, and maybe that will sort of sway the shareholders into doing more of this.
Right.
But, like, I mean, I'm not saying that the shareholders decide the content schedule. They don't. But there is definitely some... Like, Jagex has to release the updates that, in the end, end up earning the most money in the long term. That's sounds a bit unromantic, maybe, but that is how the industry works in the end. Like, if you don't make money, the game won't survive. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we as players and we as the community have a role in, you know, most of these updates, from musical raids, One Small Favor 2, the Impcatcher rework, the Murder Mystery quest, the Virago quest, and all the other tiny little things, the Luck rework even, Aura Bag, Lumbridge Crater rework. We have a responsibility to all these little updates that we've wanted for so long to enjoy them and tell Jagex how happy we are with them, because in doing that, that gets the feedback directly to them. And, you know, I think that's very important in the modern era, because we don't always feel the need to tell people when they've done something good. Most of the time when you want to tell someone something, it's because you want to complain about something, right? So this is definitely going to be something that we're going to work on going forward when the first of these come out. So,
I mean, just seeing the passion in all these developers is also very invigorating for me as a player to know that behind this game there are people that do care about the game. And I am hoping that the expansions are going to be the big carriers of RuneScape. Right. But in between, we have this space for developers to give them a bit more freedom, because the expansions are going to carry the game. And in between, maybe we can put a few musical raids and that kind of nonsense. And that would be a good balance, I think.
I totally agree with that. We also got the Sears Village rework that you wanted to talk about. This is going to be a complete rework, right?
Yes, this is going to be off the scale of Caffaby, maybe even a bit bigger. They are currently looking and relocating buildings, and they are collecting feedback of the players about the building placement. And just looking at the scale of it and Camelot, I mean, it's old. That's the best way to describe it, right? I think. And just seeing how much attention to detail and how they're setting up a big area and make it more logical again. And one of the points of feedback that I read in the thread was that it's currently really spread out and doesn't really feel like a castle town. I really hope they take that into consideration and maybe make it feel a bit connected, like Camelot with Sears Village sort of attached to it as one of these villages. But even if it's just in a whiteboxing phase, just seeing this area completely renewed makes me really happy, because it's one of these areas that you don't really visit.
What's the point of going there, right?
Recently, I teleported to Caffaby. Was utterly surprised by how it looked, but then I remember, and it's so nice. Definitely go to that thread and let them know if you have feedback about it.
My only concern is that does it make sense for the courthouse to be attached to the castle?
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
Well, no matter how you feel about it, just leave a comment in the thread.
I probably will, though I don't have a better suggestion of where to put it. looking at the map. So, I don't know. We'll see. But when is this due to come out? It doesn't seem to have a date on it. Probably summer, right?
There's probably a few months. A few months that it's going to take. But yeah, I really hope it comes out. Maybe it comes together with one of these events. That would be really awesome.
Oh, that would be good.
Because especially Sears Village is one of these areas that is sort of empty, I feel. It's very little backstory to it.
And you really don't have a point to go there unless you're looking for the courthouse or the coal trucks. And even then, at high-level mining, there's no point.
What do you have there? You have, murder mystery.
Elemental workshop.
Elemental workshop. The courthouse. And then you fix an antenna there, doing one small favor.
Right.
That's probably about all. So there's definitely some meat that we can add to that area. So, yeah.
Excellent.
So many graphical reworks. I'm super excited about all of these.
It looks really great. All right. We do have a polling update. They did put a poll in the in-game service this week. So this one is maybe a bit controversial compared to other polls that we've had recently. But the question this time is, should the Grand Exchange in Varrock be modified to have only one single booth? Currently, as of recording, 49% say yes, one single booth, 30% want to leave it as it is, and 19% don't mind.
I am missing 2%.
What do you mean?
Oh, these percentages add up to 98.
That's very interesting. I just copied the percentages that were on the page. That's quite a rounding error. What did you vote?
I vote for just go back to a single booth. I mean, it's the most social solution, I think.
Okay, that's a good way of looking at it. I'm glad you prefaced it with that. Part of me feels as though this is as a result of, of course, Prif and that being the central Grand Exchange now. There's only two there, of course. I just feel that the Grand Exchange in Varrock is built around that huge fountain in the center, and I don't see why we should need to change the way the Varrock Grand Exchange works when it works perfectly fine as it is right now. Because, you know, you have that huge circular area with all the people who show their prices of the various commodities. So, I mean, they would be on the outside then. And I don't know. It just feels like it's too big of an area to only have one booth. And, I mean, where do you put the Varrock Grand Exchange fountain then?
The area is just too big for what it is right now. Like, it used to be, like, it used to make sense for different reasons. Like, one of the reasons is it was really, really busy. There was a lot of players. And then the second reason that has to do with it is, like, when this was designed, we were still on the Java client. The Java client couldn't handle a lot of players. So by spreading them out, you improve performance for people, and it's all just a bit better. Now that we have NXT, the number of players doesn't really matter anymore. I have never had issues, really, with playing in Priv when there's a lot of players around. Same. So, like, that's what NXT does. So, like, I think it's so much better to just put people a bit closer together, and especially with the area so much less used now because there's Priv. I feel the entire area could be made smaller, which is an even bigger change than it suggested, maybe, but I think it would make sense in a way.
I voted to leave it as it is, and, you know, mainly because I think that you need to keep the Grand Exchange fountain there. I think that's a central fixture. Maybe if they could work that in, that might be something worth looking at. We'll have to see what they do with it, but, you know, it's going to be a huge empty area regardless.
So. Yeah, and maybe they need to do something with that, make it more interesting. Mm. I mean, even with the four booths, it's just empty area right now.
Right.
I hope to do something with it.
Okay. We'll definitely watch this. I don't think this is one we definitely need to campaign for one way or the other. No one has told me to do that yet. So if you guys want that, we'll do that. And this week, February 23rd, marked the first batch of the 15-year veteran capes making their way into game. And guess who got one of those?
Well, not me.
I did. So, 15 years ago, apparently, or before, I created my RuneScape account. I didn't really start playing until 2004, so this was a surprise to me when this was announced. So, my account creation date is, of course, on or before February 23rd, 2002, believe it or not. So, you go to Hans and Lumbridge, and you get the 15-year veteran cape for 150,000 GP, and then you do the emote, and you basically have an X and a V, the Roman numerals 10 and 5, for 15, appearing out of the floor, and then you appear on top of that with some fireworks. And that is the 15-year veteran cape in a nutshell. Very grand, perhaps one of the tallest cape emotes that exists in-game right now. So if you see someone running around with this, you can know they've been around for a long time and are practically ancient when it comes to RuneScape. Because a little piece of trivia here, it was the end of February 2002 when RuneScape membership was brought into game. So my account existed before the membership option even existed. So that's a long time ago, considering.
It is.
When is yours due?
So, I started playing like 2001, 2002, but that was with a different account. My current account is currently about 12 years old, so it's like 3 years and a bit, sadly.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll still be around then when it's time. No, who am I kidding myself? Of course we'll still be around for that. All right. Well, there's the RuneScape updates for this week. We do have a question for this week's episode, so we're going to move on to that right now. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this little preview of the 15-year veteran cape and our discussion on skill cape perks, which is actually going to continue right now with a question from JamAndy52. What impact do you think the skilling perks on skill capes will have on the future of the economy and RuneScape as a whole? My examples include more Vizwax because of the known runs, no mare until for skilling, extra resources when fishing, etc. And part B, what cape will Brassica Prime wear? Okay. Economy impact.
So a lot of these, like we said, a lot of these skill K perks mimic existing functionality. So I don't think we have to worry about those, because those are probably gonna, like we have existing things for that in game, and like, making it a bit more usable is probably not going to impact the game a lot. Viswax, I think the people who really wanted to do that already looked up their stuff.
Right.
I don't think it's going to convince a lot of players to start doing it.
I mean, if you look at the average prices of Viswax over the last 6 months, it's $61.75, and the current is $62.75. So it's, you know, maintained relative stability over the last 6 months. So, and, you know, I don't think that's going to affect it too much. Let's just go back to the skill cape perk list here and see if there's any that can really have a negative impact. I mean, crafting, you won't need thread anymore, but that's not a big deal. Fishing? Yeah, fishing's mentioned. But once again, there's other ways of getting extra fish, and I don't know if that is a huge economic impact. Gives a chance of instantly harvesting a patch when farming. That could make farming runs go a bit quicker. Increased chance of finding bird's nest and crystal geodes. We already have some of that in game. Yeah, so I don't think the economic impact will be too huge. Playstyle wise, I don't think. Do you think any of these will drastically change the way we play RS?
Well, I might actually go and do the Brimhaven Agility Arena now. Who am I kidding? Of course not.
Oh, you're pretty funny. For those of you guys out there who couldn't tell, that was a joke. Okay. Yeah, but nothing really... Like, see, that's the thing. None of these are game-breaking or game-changing, which is, I think, what they needed to be. You know, if anything, I think we're all going to net more XP from the quest point cape with its extra time on the Tears of Guthix, for example. So there's that.
Yay!
Yeah, but beyond that, not too much. Reduces cost of creating planks. Once again, not a huge impact. And plus, you got to remember, these are at 99. So it's not as though it's going to be everyone and their mother having these, right? And even for the farming one, for example, is instantly harvesting a patch. It doesn't trigger every herb farming run. I can tell you that right away. And at most, it's triggered once during one of my standard herb farming runs. So it's not something that happens commonly in that case. But who knows what they'll do in the future. Expanding on this, do you think that there's any of these capes that people will go with or get a 99 in to get the perk?
No. I mean, I'm not entirely sure if that is the point of these.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like
it. It's more like, hey, you got 99, here's a little extra, instead of like, you better get 99 because you want this extra. So I think in that sense, they might be balanced quite well, except for it doesn't really feel like an extra in most cases. Right.
The invention and strength ones, I could definitely see people getting if they don't have them already, because dismember is pretty good, and reducing the amount of divine energy that you need to charge items is also pretty good as well. So those are two that people might go for, and you know, things that might force me to eventually get 99 invention. Or 99 strength. So that's what I'd say about that. Which of these would Brassica Prime wear?
Cabbages don't wear capes. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he did have a little crown in the Empyrean Citadel that time, right? Or it. I don't know its gender.
I think it's gender neutral.
Yeah. So, perhaps Brassica. I don't know. It would probably wear the cooking one just because it's related to food.
The Geomancer cape, of course.
The Geomancer cape? What's that?
That's is it Geomancer? No. I don't know. It's the cape you get from the Gower quest.
Oh, Cabbage Mancer.
Cabbage man, so there you go.
Okay.
Close enough.
All right, fair enough. Thank you, JamAndy52. If you guys want to send questions in, they can be emailed to questions@rsbnb.com, left on Twitter @rsbnb, or you can call us 571-57BNB, 571-572-2632. Okay, you ready for tech news?
I'm always ready for tech news.
Yeah, we got some pretty good tech news this week. Google is working on a new artificial intelligence subroutine to filter toxic speech. And it's a question, is this the right approach? So the example given is that rather than looking at the ideas behind speech, Google will look at the words to see if they're inflammatory. So basically, rather than trying to make a computer understand our language, which is really hard, because when I speak to you, you automatically know what the context is, right? And a computer doesn't know that. And that's hard to do. So instead, what Google is doing is basically looking at the toxicity of said words. So basically what this means, the example they give is that there would be a potential argument between two strangers over the best brand of soft drink, and if the argument centers strictly on factual information, such as how much sugar is in each, chemical sensitivities on average of the human tongue to the ingredients of each drink, additives in each drink, and the role of soft drinks in the human diet, etc., the discussion takes on an informative and constructive tone in which the two sides may vehemently agree with this disagree with each other, but focus their efforts on the factual environment surrounding their mutual arguments. In the end, both sides may come away still in complete disagreement, but the conversation itself has yielded a body of citations and statements, which, much like an ad hoc academic literature review, that can benefit many others into the future. So basically the idea is if this tool sees facts and information being spread rather than people just mudslinging at one another, they will see that, okay, this is probably okay because they're having an intellectual debate.
Yeah, so, I mean, I haven't really read the article, but my assumption is that it's not fact-checking. It's just fact-checking. Looking at the tone. Like, it's
right.
Like looking at the way you provide stuff. It's still up to the reader to decide whether you accept the facts or not. It's just, like, if you start calling people names, that's when it starts to
And that's where this triggers. It says, it's a fascinating argument to offer that we must protect the ability to say Donald Trump is a moron online, as such a statement offers nothing more constructive than saying Hillary Clinton is a liar and merely polarizes rather than informs society. Calling someone's names is a classic schoolyard go-to kind of kindergarten child who has yet to form the ability or make or defend rational arguments. So that's exactly what they're trying to pair out here, is this kind of, low-level language compared to actual facts. So, I think that this is perhaps the best way that we've seen to go on this rather than, checking facts that a consensus of people on the internet says to be correct, even though it might not be correct. So it'd be interesting to see how Google employs this.
This is an incredibly difficult topic to deal with. I think you and I can agree that we have all this technology and we should probably invest effort in trying to support us in this specific use case, because it is a big problem. And in the ideal world, all the arguments are completely rational. It's just we are not in the ideal world.
And we're not robots arguing.
And we are also not robots arguing. There will be emotion that will always be part of our discussion. It's part of being human, etc. But like, this might be a step in the right direction in at least making the internet a nicer place. Do you want to get rid of all the speech entirely? Probably not. But doing this is going to be helpful. And even if we can't apply it directly, this might prove to be very informative. A lot of Google stuff uses machine learning, which exposes patterns that we as humans haven't even seen yet. Like, it finds correlations that we might not be aware of. So even if we end up finding that we don't really want to use this, this might be very, very informative and can be used in, maybe educational uses. So
maybe, yeah. Or another thing, you know, rather than just, you know, using it to outright remove content, you could use it to determine what posts and comments are perhaps hidden if they're too inflammatory, right?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be straight up censor. It can be used in a very constructive educational
right.
way as
and
well.
And this is the way it should be. You know, I'm of the opinion that we need to have the ability online to have everyone say what they want to say. And, you know, rather than relying on some central authority, Twitter, Facebook, or Google, to go out and ban people for this, I think there needs to be a self-banning thing, where if you don't really like what someone is saying, you can choose to tune them out completely. You might be intellectually depriving yourself if you don't like what they have to say. You can do that, use it for that. But also, if they are being outright abusive to you, that is the time when you self-ban them. I think that's the way to go with this. And perhaps this tool could be used as a way of kind of shining the light on things that we might want to hide away. So,
I mean, this is like, it's always better to have a rational, intellectual discussion.
Oh, I totally agree.
It is. This might sound weird, but having a discussion with someone you disagree with on a rational, intellectual level, even if you completely disagree at the end of the discussion, you'll feel satisfied.
Yes.
Because it will have been interesting.
Yep.
You'll have learned things, most
totally.
Likely. It's just a positive experience. Let's use technology to bring this to more people. And maybe we can use this to slowly drive a culture change around the world.
I agree. And I mean, like what you said, I get most satisfied after I talk to someone I disagree with. And, you know, they might see it as a personal attack or something like that. But I think if we aren't allowed to disagree, then that takes away a central way of learning. And that is what I think a lot of these heavy-handed social sites are doing. So I'd like to see Google work on this and see the way it gets applied. And that's why this is Tech News of the Week. Is because this approach, to my knowledge, hasn't been tried before.
Yeah. So yeah, let's just do stand still with the fact that these social media sites try to deal with this the best they can. Like, it is an incredibly difficult topic, and these initiatives show that they take this seriously. They take our concerns about censor seriously, and they are looking at the best way of
doing
this.
At least Google does.
At least Google does. I assume that I would like to think that's probably the best choice of words here, that it's being done properly across the board, but that might not be entirely true.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, we'll keep an eye on this, and I got a little bit more on this later. Also, you have an interesting piece of tech news here that is of concern to all of us, I believe.
Yes. So, I mean, call it a bit of pride as part of this, because the discovery was done by a group of Dutch scientists. So, I don't know. call it a bit of pride. But
yeah, don't you Dutch people produce like the highest per capita computer scientists or something?
We do really, really well, actually. But yeah. There is this hashing algorithm. It's called SHA-1 or SHA-1, whichever you prefer. And it is an old, fairly old hashing algorithm. And back in 2005,
explain what a hashing algorithm is for
hashing
normal people listening.
So hashing algorithm is you can put any text, any file, like any thing, any computer thing you can put in there, and it will produce a short string, a short collection of letters and numbers that is unique for that file. And that might sound weird, because there can be so many different files, and how can they all be collapsed to a set of tokens that's maybe like 64 characters? That is because these hashing algorithms have certain properties to them that make it pretty much impossible to find collisions, because every file, like if you look at, say, just PDFs, they have a special structure to them that makes the possible combinations of them like limited.
Image files all have a specific image header.
This is also how, for example, zip compression works. Like, zip compression looks at the file, and there's a lot of redundancy in files, and it compresses those to a blob that can be used to reproduce the original file. And hashing algorithms are different from compression in that you can reduce them, but you can never go back to the original. That is very, very important.
It's one way. Hashing.
It's a one-way thing. But also the outcome is, I mean, it's never entirely unique. You can't prove that. But it has properties that make it so that for all practical purposes, it is completely unique. And what this does is if you download a file from the internet, for example, let's say you download a executable, that's dangerous. That might be a virus. So what happens on the website you download it from, what it often has is a so-called checksum, which is the hash of the file. So what you do is you download the executable, you hash the file locally, you get a little string, and you compare that to the text that's actually on the website. And if they're the same, you know you download the file that they actually link to. So that's called signing a file. And this is actually used in a lot of places. It's used for Git version control. It is used for browser certificates. It's used for email certificates. It's used for, I mean, I can go on, but like everything that includes the word
certificate. It's used for versions of SHA are used for passwords on message board systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like passwords is a very good example, actually. So what happens if you register for a website? In most cases, sometimes they just store your password. If that's the case,
you don't want to be on that website.
Don't be on that website. But like,
and most often you can tell if you say, I want to reset my password, and they email you your old password, that's a bad sign.
Yes. So this is the reason why if you reset your password on most websites, they will tell you, we reset your password to something, but not your original password, because they can't get that, because they store the hash, which is irreversible. But because they can, when you type in your password afterwards, they can calculate the hash and compare it to the previous hash. And if those are the same, because of the uniqueness, the passwords must be the same. So that's what the main reason for hashing is. And it works for arbitrarily large things. So
and it's quick to do as well.
It's really fast. So SHA-1 is one of these. So the most famous one is probably MD5, which is unsafe.
Unsafe, yeah.
It's unsafe. That's because it is possible to find two things that map to the same hash. So it is in theory possible that you download one thing, but were supposed to download the other thing, but they still have the same hash. So that is possible. So that's why that is unsafe. SHA-1 has been around a bit, like, it's a bit safer. It's like a step up. But back in 2005, it was shown that theoretically you can find a collision. That was 12 years ago.
And we found
today, the first actual collision has been found, which means that it's now actually practically possible, basically. And
And some of the metrics they give here, you know, the shattered website that we're looking at right now, 110 GPUs could take 1 year. Find the collision.
Yes.
Brute forcing would take 12 million GPUs to find one collision in 1 year.
So what they did is they had two PDFs. They look different, but they produced the same hash, which means that you could, in theory, download one while you think you download the other, and you can never know by the hash.
Yeah, and that's not good.
Dangerous. And this is a problem because that also means you could be going to a website that the browser thinks is safe, that has like the green lock in the corner that you probably all have seen. But it
these
might
guys
be
don't have a certificate on their website.
You might not have seen it on Airbnb. That you might have seen on like login pages for, that And that certificate might be false. So you might be thinking you're logging into your bank, but you might actually be logging in into a website by another, like, evil person that then gets your password and all your money. And that's a problem. And the point is that SHA-1 is actually still used by Git, for example, but also by many other services. So this is sort of a call to action. Like, this is feasible. So you need to stop using them. So this is a call to action.
Right.
This is just...
And I guess what's the solution to, is it to move to like something like SHA 256 then, or SHA 512?
Yes, SHA 256 and SHA 3 are both still considered secure.
Okay.
So moving to that is...
And like, 512 would probably be even better.
Probably, yeah. Also slower to calculate. Those are all still considered safe, so you're fine if you use those.
Right, and I think most modern certificates online would be at least calculated with 512, perhaps 1024.
So every current certificate authority for like browser certificates actually is no longer allowed to use SHA-1.
Right, and Google Chrome checks for this. Firefox.
Google, since January, like since an update in January, I think it's Chrome 56.
Yeah, that's what we're on right now.
Actually marks certificates that use SHA-1 as insecure, and Firefox has an update in the pipeline that's going to do that in the near future. So, like, we're catching up.
Right. So basically, again, if you use a modern browser, you should be okay on the certificate side of things.
Then again, this was proven to be theoretically insecure 12 years ago.
Right.
12 years is a lot of time in techland.
Yeah. And, I mean, I assume eventually we might see something like this for SHA 256 or 512, but that requires a lot more work to break, just because of the bits of entropy associated with it.
I mean, the only reason this could be done in, I think they used, in the end, just short of 10 quintillion SHA operations. They tried 10 quintillion hashes. That is a 1 with 19 zeros behind
it. Yep. That's what I'm looking at right now here.
That's a lot of zeros. So, but even that, like you said, this would be 110.
2 to the 63, basically, is its prime factorization.
Yeah. So, this would take 110 GPUs, right? As opposed to 12 million GPUs,
right,
which would force it. And for SHA 256 and SHA 3, they haven't found this weakness yet. So to get that, you'd have to brute force it. And that is going to be... that's infeasible. So they are secure for now, until there's a mathematical proof that you can sort of work around this, which is what happened with SHA 1. So for now, you're probably fine.
All right. Well, now that we've scared everyone, I guess what we'll just say is, if you use a modern browser, you're probably fine. And just make sure that when you're downloading stuff off the internet, you know exactly what you're getting.
Yeah. And also just, I mean, this is general password advice. Just don't use the same password on two different sites.
Right.
Only one of them has to be store your password, not hashed or badly hashed. Because if it's hashed by MD5, like MD5 is so insecure, there's tables that translate from MD5 back to your password, especially if you have like a common password that's like a word. It's trivial to backtrack that. So only one of the websites has to be insecure. They know your password and they can reuse it everywhere else. So as long as you make sure your password is unique per website, even if one of the websites is like hacked and has bad security, you don't have to worry about anything.
All right. Well, moving on to some news that is very exciting for everyone, that isn't necessarily going to scare us away. NASA has revealed their largest batch of Earth-sized exoplanets in a habitable zone around a single star. The NASA Spitzer Space Telescope confirmed the existence of 7 Earth-sized planets around a single star, and 3 of these are confirmed to be located in the habitable zone. This was called the TRAPPIST-1 system, of course, using the TRAPPIST space probe. It's about 40 light years away from Earth in the constellation of Aquarius. So, this is huge because it was only, you know, a few years ago, in fact, probably less than a decade ago, we didn't really know how many rocky planets there were out there. We were mainly just finding gas giants. But now that we have found this many small rocky planets so close, this is really just the tip of the iceberg about how many of these rocky planets are going to be out there. And what that means is that, you know, we look for life in conditions that look similar to what we have on Earth, and that is a place where water can exist and that it's a rocky planet. So there is the potential that there could be liquid water on 3 of these planets, which of course is a key ingredient to life. So huge discovery for this. And I think what's also more interesting is the fact that they're orbiting what's called a brown dwarf, which is a very small, cool star. And if you were on one of these planets, you would actually be able to see the other planets in the sky at the scale that we can see our moon. So that's how small this system is. And, you know, it's just astounding to realize that there are other rocky planets out there like this. So,
and in years, only scale of like one or a few days in that system as well. Like,
right. And, I mean, with that being said, you also then have to start considering factors like axial tilt. Because if you have planets that are going to be tilted at, you know, 25 degrees like our system is, that means you're going to have seasons. And those are going to swing quick if their years are only, you know, a couple days, right? So
the bigger problem might actually be that these planets could be tidally locked.
Yes.
And to the sun.
They would, of course, face the sun the entire time. And then, of course, you wouldn't want to live on a place like that because it could get too hot on one side, too cold on the other. And of course,
there might be a habitable zone around it.
Right. And, you know, there's going to be more observations done to see if they're tidally locked, what the compositions of their atmosphere is. Could they potentially have water on them? And, of course, all that is to come in the near future with add-ons. I think they said they wanted to use the James Webb Space Telescope launching in 2018 for that. So, really amazing.
So, tangentially to this, have you actually seen today's Google Doodle?
Yes, I have. And, you know, with this, you can see why Google is so excited about this, because 7 discovered planets like this is something that never really has happened before. All rocky and all 3 of which potentially habitable.
So, yeah.
Who knows?
It's just... Yeah, like you probably listen to this after today, but like look up like a GIF or anything, and just if you haven't seen it, it's really well executed and on such a short time, I imagine. Like,
right, because this press release just came out yesterday on Wednesday. Also, NASA has a 360-degree video with some animations in the background, where if you have VR, you can put this on and you can kind of get a picture of what it would look like if you were standing on one of these planets and see the others in the sky, and basically artist conception of what it might look like. So, really amazing. And I think this kind of also shows of why we need to fund science and really start focusing on space again, because in the 60s and 70s, there was the U.S. move on space primarily because of the Soviet Union and the Cold War. And with that gone now, the interest in space beyond low Earth orbit has kind of disappeared, aside from observatory effects like this. So I wouldn't mind seeing a fast track towards the moon and Mars. Probably the moon first for a colony or something like that. But
I think NASA was planning on putting people on the moon again, like in a few years.
Yeah.
They had a press release of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they definitely need to get the private partnerships sorted out with how many accidents SpaceX has had getting going. So that's also something to be concerned about. But and I should also say that 40 light years is relatively close to Earth. It's not, you know, 200 light years away or on the other side of the galaxy, so to speak. It's in the neighborhood. It's only 10 times further away than Alpha Centauri, which is the nearest star. So there are other rocky planets out there that we could potentially set foot on and survive if we had the means to get there. So
I think Proxima Centauri is slightly closer, but it's the same with the powered binary system.
Right. Right. That's what I meant. Thank you for clarifying on that. Right on. I love your level of detail on that. All right. You ready to move on to other things?
Yes, sure thing.
Okie dokie. So we got our March skill of the month, which is thieving. So if you want to sign up for this, all you need is an RSBNB form account. I know there have been those of you guys out there asking, do I need a form account? I haven't found a way to decouple the skill of the month yet from the forum accounts, so we do need a form account to just manage the email and signing up and letting you know when it's time to start. So all you need to do is go to rsbnb.com/forum, sign up for an account, and then you can sign up for skill of the month by going to rsbnb.com/skotm for the March thieving skill of the month, which should be very interesting considering thieving is another AFK skill, and there's lots of potential XP to be gained. So, but anyways, fishing skill of the month, February. We see that there was a slight lead change between Jamandy 52 and Adiron Cronon over double XP weekend, but Adiron Cronon has taken up number one again with 49 million experience gained. Second place, Jamandy 52 with 40.5, and third place, Undoer with 26.8 million experience gained. You know, I was expecting more of a bump over double XP weekend, but not too much of a bump here. I guess everyone was training everything else then. So, anyways.
Fishing is not one of these double XP.
Yeah, because so many people already have 99, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
So, we assume that PHPBB hashes the passwords, right? I assume that registering for RSBNB, your password is going to be hashed fine.
Oh yeah, we are hashed fine. We're not using MD5. We are using something good.
And also not SHA1?
No.
Good.
Yes. Okay. So we have this thing called Achievements of the Week. And yeah, it was double XP weekend. And you guys, as a part of this community, really did a lot over double XP weekend. Let's see, is there a way to count lines here in this doc? I don't know if there is.
I think you can. Let me try that for you quickly.
Yeah. Basically, normally we like to read all these achievements, but we will be here.
I can give you a word count, but...
Yeah, no.
I can copy this in my cassette.
Actually, I can solve this for you quickly. Yeah, I just need
97.
97. Let me see if that... if that jives with my little tool here. I actually realized I do have the ability to do this by virtue of the Unix command wordcount-l. Yeah, 97. Thank you.
So just because you, I'm not sure if you're looking at this, but this is like two pages, two full pages and a bit of achievements.
Yeah. So we're not going to read through all these because we would be here forever. I am going to say that if you want to read through this huge list, head on over to update.rsbnb.com and find the show notes. And in the show notes, you can see the full show notes with this list. And yeah, if your name is on here, congratulations, but we will read through some of them. So starting on February 22nd, we had Touchpad Pro with 200 million fishing XP. That's a great way to start off. Colton also got 99 Hunter. Xenon Ray from Clan Quest got 99 Hunter as well on the 22nd. And then Colton on the 22nd also got 99 hunters. So some good level 99 hunters right there. Yeah.
I'm really impressed about Colton getting 99 hunter twice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, oops, did I read that twice? Oh, we appear to have had a slight data problem. I'll let you read the ones from the 21st now.
All right, because the 21 first is also pretty interesting because Colton got 99 divination twice for some reason. Then Xenon Ray from Clan Quest got 99 runecrafting. Choto 3000 got 99 strength. Giovannic got 99 runecrafting. And Socant Comp got 120 invention. So that is actually a step towards Comp. Congratulations on all of those. And also on all the double XP achievements. You have been working hard.
Yeah, everyone has been working hard. 97 achievements in total in pretty much every skill and game. So good job to everyone who spent time playing RuneScape this weekend. I am not on this list, but hey, it's there. Let's see. Can we mention 120s? Yeah, I think we can mention 120s, right?
Sure.
Let's see. So moving down the list. Oh boy, that's a long list. Socant Comp, 120 Invention. I'm not going to read the days. Arany, 120 Slayer, getting ahead of it for when that comes out in summer. Kebab Thief, 120 Dungeoneering. Touchpad Pro, 120 Prayer. Vodka B, 120 Dungeoneering. Garden Chick, 120 Construction. That's an expensive one. Wow. Let's see, moving on. I think that's it for the 120s. So, some good 120s there all around for everyone involved. So, good job, everyone. All right, you ready for pick of the week?
I am.
All right.
Ready for pick of the week.
So, pick of the week is an application for the iPhone. I'm not sure if there is an Android version of it. Oh, there is, actually. That was the first Google result. It's called Starwalk 2. Basically, this is a little app that you can install on your smartphone or tablet. And then what you can do is you can use your geolocation to figure out what exactly is in the sky above you. It does everything from planets, stars, satellites, and you can totally customize what it shows. There used to be an older version of it just called Starwalk. This one is, you know, much more polished and refined and basically looks like a modern app. So if you are at all ever, you know, outside wondering what's above your head, you can just say, hey, I wonder what this is, tap, and oh, there we go. It also has a night mode. So if you are out using a telescope and you want to basically use it to guide your telescope, you can do that. What you got to do is you got to enable night mode, and that turns the entire screen red because red preserves night vision compared to standard blue light. So they've really gone all out with this app. It's free, believe it or not, and then you can purchase add-ons to add features to it. So it's a good way to get into it. With the free version. Also, if you have an Apple Watch, there's a neat little feature where you can point at the sky with your wrist that has the watch on it, and then your display on your phone or iPad will update and show what you're looking at.
So you can use it to find Aquarius and fantasize about the seven exoplanets there.
There you go. That's actually a pretty good idea. I hadn't thought of that. So you could pop it up, find Aquarius, and oh, okay, so that's where we got to look in the sky to imagine what's going on these seven exoplanets. So, you know, I think that this pick of the week just makes so much sense this week because, you know, we talked about space in tech news, and it's a huge discovery. And, you know, so many people look up at the night sky and don't realize how much is up there and how much up there is close and meaningful, like the space station and what the difference between the stars and the planets look like. So it's, you know, just a good way to get educated about the sky. So if you ever find yourself looking up at the sky, I would highly recommend that you pick this up on your device. It's called Starwalk 2, available on both iOS and Android. So that's the pick of the week. I think everyone should pick this up. All right. What have you been up to on RS?
So, like, the only things I have or had left for my max cape is combat skills and invention. So when I got like 2 hours to play during the double XP week, and I decided to finish off ranged and magic, because I did some dungeoneering as well, and that got me really close to 99 ranged, and I decided to also get magic. So that's 2 more skills I have now used up. So I'm using the tail XP period to get melee experience just to make sure that I can get those to 99. And then invention should be relatively simple because I'm like 96, so it's like a few disassemblies left. So yeah, I'm getting really close to that cape, and if we've got to see what we're gonna do after that.
All right, yeah. I mean, there's lots of stuff you could definitely pick up in RS. Mm-hmm. As for me, for double XP weekend, I got 69 and 70 invention by way of protein cog. I had lots of those sitting in my bank, so I used those. Also, I got 97 Slayer by way of Slayer dummies that were also sitting in the bank. And perhaps the thing that I'm most proud about, I got 3.7 million Herblore XP using the herbs that I had. And the best part about this is I only spent 6 million GP because the herbs were farmed. I had the flasks from my own flask gathering. So I really only spent on standard super magic and ranged and attack strength defense potions and some of the secondaries that I needed. So it wasn't a huge bust in the bank for me to get 3.7 million Herblore XP.
So, tell me more about those secondaries, Shane.
So it was Wednesday last week before double XP weekend. And I was looking through my bank and saying, oh, I'd like to make some, you know, super magic potions. I'd like to make some super ranged potions. I'd like to make some super strength potions. And oops, I forgot to farm secondaries. So that is actually what forced me to buy my super attack, strength, defense, magic, and ranged potions, is because I forgot to buy secondaries. And that was the large bulk of the 6 million that I ended up actually losing on this project. Along the way, I also made, in addition to the, you know, just some overloads, I made 200 overload potions, a variety of them, you know, supreme overload, bunch of those, and some holy overload and some searing overload, just to have in the bank, just because. And I mean, I don't know if I'll ever use them, but they're there. 200 is a lot for me. But aside from that, I made the super war master potions, which is a combination of the attack, strength, defense, magic, and ranged super version potions, because those are one of the few Priftina's combination potions that are sellable on the Grand Exchange. So I sold those and managed to recoup a good portion of my losses from that, so that was good. And with the rest of the time on double XP weekend for Herblore, I mainly focused on the super prayer renewal flasks that you get by combining the prayer potions and the prayer renewals into a flask, and you can sell those as well. So that's what Herblore mainly consisted of for me on double XP weekend. Gained over 1,000 Herblore ranks. No, they're probably gone now. But anyways, so yeah, that was me.
Cool.
I also put together a little Informer article that you guys might find interesting. It goes on about the effect of social bubbles, which I think is something that we all end up creating on social media sites like Twitter and Facebook, because it's only natural, I think, that we follow people that agree with us in some cases, right? Or that we agree with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk about the negative effect that can possibly have, and how, you know, debate is good for everyone to have and how you can grow from that. So that's there. And then some of the questions I put about how social media websites can be transparent and honest about the way they handle operations. Like, should users self-ban by muting rather than relying on a ban hammer? Is free speech a core value? Is there a central tenant, or will the organization operate differently in China than in the U.S.? Whose thoughts are what the organization thrives on, the view of the organization, or what the user wants? Are trending topics curated, or are they open to whatever the users are talking about? What's more important, the global whole or the entire or the individual? So I think those are some questions that we can all ask when we're browsing our social media today, especially with the tech news we had about Google. So give it a read. Anything else before we wrap up?
I think that was all for me.
Yep, I agree. And lots of discussion on skill cape perks and goodness in RS and making RuneScape whole again. So I'm happy with what we saw from Game Jam. And with that,
I'm less happy with what we saw from skill perks.
Yeah, but Game Jam kind of made up for it, right?
I agree. Yeah.
Well, with that being said, we will see you next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye-bye.